This week, Trump is taking a victory lap around Europe and signing copies of the Art of the Deal as he celebrates the forthcoming trade deal with the EU. And meanwhile, in the United States, it's safe to say that the tea has been spilled as tens of thousands of women's data has been leaked onto the internet by an app, a dating advice app, that's supposed to enhance the safety of women in modern dating. Safe to say it's done exactly the opposite of that at this point, isn't it, Kyle?
It has. Welcome to Human Reaction, where we're going to spill all the tea
all
today.
Of it.
We got tea coming out of Europe. That's where tea normally comes from.
You know,
actually, that
is
kind of British tea, right?
Well, I mean, I suppose it originally comes from probably like China.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
China.
But we're going to be talking about a lot of these trade deals that are going on. And Trump is taking victory laps. Like, it's kind of seen as America got a lot of wins here. And maybe some of the other countries didn't get so many wins, especially in the European front is what it seems like. But before we get into it, make sure that you like the video, comment on it. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you think about the trade deals. Tell us what you think about all the tea that has been spilt so far.
Teagate, one might say. I think we've coined that here. This will be the first time it's ever used, Teagate. Tell us what you think in the comments. Like, subscribe, all those things. So let's get into the trade stuff first. We're going to save the tea for the end. Mm-hmm. Lay the groundwork here for us. What's going on with these trade deals that were just announced?
Well, I think we should start off with a little shot from Trump's golf course over at where he is taking his victory lap with a nice drive off the first tee box over at Turnberry. And one of the reasons we're starting with this is that I've been seeing a lot of chatter online that are all just like, Trump spent $10 million U.S. taxpayer dollars to just go to his golf course in Scotland. And he's like, yeah, but there was also trade deals that happened, you know, like.
Yeah, this is an intermission, right? An intermission.
Yeah.
And I don't know, to this point in his administration, how many days off has he taken versus how many days Joe Biden had taken off by this point? I think that'd be an interesting comparison.
Well, remember back in the day when this is one of these things where I never take the whole golf thing seriously, because this is what people always said about Obama back in the day, too. We're just like, he's just golfing all the time. I kind of expect the president to take some time off here or there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you
got to rest
hope.
And relax a little bit.
Just a little bit. Just mm-hmm. a little.
But yeah, here's that championship golf swing that is Donald Trump. He's always got this strange swing. Man.
He really does. But you know, it does seem to be effective.
It does seem to crank it.
Especially for his age, you know. He's got a lot of hip mobility.
Got to get those hips moving.
Seen a good turn there. You know, grip looks good. Really gets his weight through onto the front leg. I mean, man, it's a solid swing.
He actually smokes, like, his backswing is he only goes like halfway up and then he just smokes it.
I know.
It's such a weird swing to me.
His tempo is very strange. There's a lot of things about that I almost don't even want to watch because I don't want them to make their way into my golf swing.
Yeah.
Although, apparently he did stripe it right down the middle of the fairway, so maybe I could take some notes.
I did see, and I didn't pull this clip, I saw somebody, I think it was somebody on the Democrat side, like some like group on the Democrat side, is they were trying to say that Trump was cheating on the golf course, where one of his caddies dropped a ball, but is like he knocked it out of bounds, so they dropped a ball. It was like you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to drop a ball where it crosses out and then take a stroke off. Now, did he take a stroke off? I don't know.
Well,
Golfgate,
audit the scorecard. CNN, do it. We got to know. This is important stuff.
Yeah. So I guess we'll start off with this Friday, August 1st, is the deadlines for all of these negotiations going down. So we're seeing all of them come up. We had the European Union, we had the United Kingdom, Japan, Indonesia, Philippines. China actually got extended again.
Really?
I believe it's another 90 days. So the China one has been extended twice at this point, I believe.
So they must be working on something. And obviously this is a very important one. It's our number one trading partner.
Yeah.
If it doesn't go well, it could result in a lot of economic turmoil, probably on both sides, and I'm sure both nations would love to avoid that. So they must be working on something pretty substantial, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and it shows good signs of progress because China has lowered their their like temporary tariffs to 10% on us, and also resumed their rare earth exports, which is something that they did cut off there in the beginning of the whole, that escalatory spiral that happened. Cause didn't we go up to like 155 on them or something like that? Or
it was crazy.
Something crazy. Yeah. And then we have our tariffs set to them during this phase at 30%. So it's like the 10% baseline that everybody's supposed to be hit by. And then the 20% on fentanyl concerns, quote unquote. So that's kind of where the China thing is right now. So it's just like, we'll check back in 90 days. I believe it's another 90 days. It might be, I assume it's 90 days. But the big ones that happened this week in particular was on the Scotland trip. He met with Starmer, Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of the UK, and then Ursula von, whatever her name is.
Von der Leyen.
Von der Leyen. When you just look up Ursula on Twitter, it's always like von der Satan, von der Tyrant. Like, that's what like the entire thing is. Everybody calls her the War Queen. So I always like forget what her name is because I'm so used to seeing like slurs for her.
Trumpisms.
Yeah. Just like European citizens. Like,
oh, no kidding.
She only this month barely passed a no confidence vote.
Right.
So she's not very well received right now. But let's maybe get into the UK stuff first. If you remember right, we talked about trade. A while back with the UK, because they were the first ones to kind of knock on the door when all the tariff war stuff happened. And just to reiterate there, the big details of this is that the US puts 10% tariffs on the UK, which is notably like that's the baseline. It's notably lower than like everyone else. Like there's very few countries that are that low. So it seems that Trump is trying to establish a special relationship with the UK. And there's a lot of efforts to bolster the supply line between the two countries.
Right. And there was a meeting several months ago that we talked about where, who was it that came over? I'm forgetting.
Starmer.
Was it Keir Starmer that came over? Yeah. And they were kind of talking about, there was something, some underlying thing during all of that, that there was
weird Twitter back and forths and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that were
like
going
negotiations
on.
About like something about like rejoining the kingdom or something like that. Like Trump was going to bend the knee, but it really seemed like it went the other way.
Yeah.
Anyway,
which is how it kind of feels to me. And it's also when the Canada stuff started up and the Denmark, Germany stuff started up too. Like there's interesting, and that's the thing that I kind of encourage people to think about with this is like, there's interesting European economic war games and like domestic politics in Europe that's going on with all this right now. And I actually have some stuff that's came out of Russia talking about this trade deal as well, where they're talking about that, where it's like Europe is becoming more and more subservient to the United States through all of this. But the big wins from the UK is the steel and aluminum tariffs dropped from 25% to 0%. And this is a huge victory for Starmer because I believe he's up for re-election next month, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so Labour Party, workers, et cetera, massive steel industry in the UK that was struggling. And now this steel tariff, big win for them. Aerospace products from the UK face no tariffs. The first 100,000 vehicles have 10% tariffs, then go up to 25%. So automobile trade back and forth is going to be a big deal. Ethanol and agricultural markets have big investments coming in. Then there's a lot of things that are still kind of up for the negotiations because a lot of this is still kind of that framework phase where things still have to be fully worked out and like voted on and like all this stuff in different countries where a lot of things around digital trade, IP, and the film industry are still being negotiated.
Interesting.
But I kind of want to play some of these. There were some awkward moments from the meeting that I kind of want to play here. Particularly, you can kind of see how these European leaders are not, they don't seem to have high approval in their countries, it seems like. That's what I'm noticing. A lot of people are using the Trump time being here to kind of set up the leaders for gaffes or kind of weird moments or use it to like have Trump comment on their domestic policy, that type of stuff that's going on. So the first one is, if you remember right and you've listened for a long time, we have covered in the past some of the free speech issues that have been going on in Europe, people getting put in jail for Facebook posts, stuff like that. So here is Keir Starmer being asked about free speech with Trump sitting there during the meeting.
There are new powers here to censor your site, state-mandated powers.
To censor my site?
To censor your site and Twitter and Facebook. I mean truth. Is that okay?
Well, I don't think he's going to censor my site because I say only good things. Will you please uncensor my site?
Yeah, we're not censoring anyone. We've got some measures which are there to protect children, in particular from sites like suicide sites. We've had too many cases in the United Kingdom of young children taking their own lives, and when you look through their social media, they've been accessing sites which talk about suicide and encouraging, if you like, children down that road, and that is what we want to stop. Nothing about censoring free speech.
But that treats all adults like
children. This country is the proud.
But that can treat all adults like
children. Free speech in this country has been for a very long time. We're very, very proud of it. We will protect it forever. But at the same time, I personally feel very strongly that we should protect our young teenagers, and that's what it usually is, from things like suicide sites. I don't see that as a free speech issue. I see that as a child protection
issue. We actually passed a bill in Congress, headed up by my wife, actually, which was to pull bad stuff out having to do with children, because it is a problem. But I cannot imagine him censoring truth social. This is more of a very political, and you know, it's been a very big success.
It's not going to happen.
And I only say good.
Yeah.
Okay, but what about the other ones that they have been? I mean, and it's not so much even censorship that's the problem. I kind of wish you had asked that a little bit differently. We're talking about people getting arrested for posting things. That's not overt censorship per se. It's certainly a chilling of speech, if you will, if you post something and then police knock on your door. Like, come on. That's really disingenuous for Keir Starmer to sit up there and say, oh, we're not going to censor social media. Like, come on, dude.
Yeah, it is one of these things where I wish I understood British politics a little bit better, because he seems to be in this, like, tug of war right now between, like, the Labour Party, the London financial elite, his relationship with America. Like, there seems to be this... I'm just getting this inkling of a sense of this, like, back and forth tug of war that he's existing between right now.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see how that goes, especially because, like, you know, this is post Brexit. They're not part of the EU anymore. They still kind of have, you know, they're not like fully broken away, but like there's been always that tension that exists there.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of curious to see where this relationship goes. And especially because, like, you know, we're generally more on the like right wing / libertarian bent here. And he's the Labour Party, which just tends to be the more left wing bent too.
Right.
But like, I feel like conservatives in the UK have felt very betrayed by their conservatives at this point in time. So like, there's this like weird political shift that seems to be happening there, and as Europe seems to be realigning itself in such a way, like, I'm just curious to see where that all goes right now.
Yeah. Well, especially I'm sure as well that he feels some pressure from the Reform Party, which we did talk about as well on the bingo card episode, the members only episode, with Nigel Farage, and the Reform Party leading polling as of the latest numbers that came out.
And this was actually what I originally wanted to link. I linked a different thing here, but here's another thing on the free speech stuff. Like, so he's getting asked a lot of questions about this with Trump around.
We discussed the importance of free speech today.
Well, free speech is very important. I don't know if you're referring to any place in particular. Perhaps they are, but
we've had free speech for a very, very long time here. So we're very proud about that.
Well, what's your advice on the small boats?
There's a bit of an awkwardness there with Kirk here, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they're referring to any place in particular. Glances over at him.
Exactly. And then, well, and it was just like Keir's body language is like, he like checked his watch he's for like, a moment, and then he's just like, well, we've had free speech for a very long time. Like, there's no problems here.
Like, at least 12 minutes now.
It's like, check my watch. It's been here. It's been here.
It's here.
Free speech o'clock as I'm looking at it. Like, that's how it kind of felt to me as he was, as he was looking at it.
Weird.
Then there's this other awkward moment because that's centered around immigration here, and it's part of the same little section of the meeting here where they're kind of outside at the I believe this is on Trump's property in Scotland, I believe is where they're at right now, right? But they're talking about immigration, and just kind of the way Trump dominates this conversation is interesting to me.
Crisis, Mr. President. How would you deal with it? What's your advice on dealing with a small boats crisis in this country? The small boats crisis.
It's about the boats coming over the channel, so we're taking a lot of action to stop people coming over the channel who shouldn't be here, stopping them coming in the first place.
Well, look, immigration is a big factor, and I think, frankly, if they're coming from other countries and you don't know who they are, and are they coming from prisons? We have them where they
came in from prisons. We're moving them all out. We had a border last June, just recent, you know, last month. We had zero people come into the country, zero, other than coming through legal means. If you're stopping immigration and stopping the wrong people, I give my hats are off to you. You're doing not a good thing. You're doing a fantastic thing. So I know nothing about the boats. But if the boats are loaded up with bad people, and they usually are, because, you know, other countries don't send their best. They send the people that they don't want. And they're not stupid people. And they send the people that they don't want. And I've heard that you've taken a much stronger stance on
immigration. Yeah, we've done all the work stopping them coming. We just signed an agreement to return them. And we've returned 35,000, in fact, on the first year of this Labour government, of people who shouldn't be in this country. So we're very pleased that we're getting on with returning people who've got no right to be here.
Yeah, and the general sentiment that I was finding, like, I was just kind of like, throughout all these, I was trying to get a feel of, like, how are British people feeling about the recent meeting? How are European feeling about the recent trade deal with the EU? And the general sentiment I'm seeing on this is, like, Keir Starmer's done basically nothing. Like,
right.
At least the sense I'm getting is that the British people feel like it's very kind of Joe Biden-like in how he's handling the immigration problem, where it's just like, open it all up and let him come in, and then put on these, like, surface level measures that don't really do anything.
Yeah. Where does he fall on the sort of nationalist to globalist spectrum, Keir Starmer, that is?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, it would seem to me that, like, the Labour Party being a little bit more left, a little more progressive, if we're going to sort of try to equate it to the United States political system, that he would be a little bit more in the Joe Biden camp of things, which is very, you know, deferential to the international order and these things, right? And so I would say his baseline positions would be immigration good, free speech bad if it hurts people.
That's what I would expect.
You know, in terms of especially people speaking out against immigration using their free speech to do that. And so with these two clips that we've just played, he's obviously moderating his positions there pretty substantially, probably because A, he's in the presence of Donald Trump, who has the exact polar opposite views on those things, at least generally speaking. Can't say completely, but particularly with immigration. And then also, again, with the pressure from Nigel Farage coming from the Reform Party and the pressure from the public, who are obviously getting very uneasy with the huge immigration issue and people being arrested for Facebook posts.
I imagine Canada is a corollary to this, because what we saw with the Canadian election is Carney really moderating the Liberals' positions on everything and making concessions, talking about tax cuts, all these things. And then with the Conservatives having kind of a milquetoast flag bearer in what was supposed to be just this Conservative sweep. And like those combinations led to Conservatives picking up some seats, but nobody has the majority in Parliament. And then the central banker, Jim Carney, being kind of this banker rock star that's going to fix Canada type of a deal, that vibe, him coming in with more moderate positions. I was like, we're going to get rid of all that nonsense that was going on here that Trudeau was doing, even though I was an advisor for Trudeau. that type of stuff, right?
Right. Old boss, same as the new boss. Same as the old boss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so I'm kind of, I don't know British politics enough. I imagine with the election being this close that there's a lot of that moderation that's happening. And it's just like, let's get away from some of the more radical elements of our base and try to moderate in order to have a more of a consensus and get people independence over type of vibe. That's what I imagine, especially when immigration is such a hot button topic in the UK in particular.
Right. Interesting here that, you know, I mean, they haven't directly addressed anything regarding the trade deal, but the body language does definitely feel imbalanced. I mean, like you mentioned here, Trump kind of just steps into this conversation that was directed towards Starmer regarding, you know, immigration in the channel. Trump, admittedly knowing nothing about it, just continues to talk about it.
I don't know, like, anything about the boats, but I know countries don't send their best.
It's like, yeah, the vibe between these two definitely has a certain power dynamic, and it's not necessarily in Keir Starmer's favor.
Well, and that's kind of the sense that I'm getting. Like, America is spreading its economic dominance through these trade deals right now, and it's showcasing to me what I'm saying is, like, a lot of the narrative that it seems where it's just like, America's in decline, they're falling apart, they don't have the economic sway that they used to. as I'm watching all of these things play out, that doesn't seem to be the case. That seems to be propagandistic in a lot of ways of that spread. And then I think that it also often ends up with this like doomerism that ends up spreading throughout the US. But then as I'm watching, I'm like, I don't know, America got the better end of a lot of these deals right here. Now you could quibble about certain things, or there might be certain ideological views about tariffs or whatnot. But like, when I'm looking at the revenue streams that are coming in, this should generate about $90 billion annually out of the UK on this stuff. You know, like that, a lot of that's subject to change and depending on how the industries move and manufacturing onshore and like all that stuff that's happening. But seems to be pretty strong there on where that's going. Then the next thing here is the next big one is the Europe one. Because the Starmer stuff is just kind of like we're solidifying the frameworks that we already had in place like a couple months ago.
Sure.
With the EU, this is a framework agreement, but the U.S. is going to be imposing 15% tariffs on most goods, which is reduced from the threatened 30%. That's what it was originally threatened because of non-tariff trade barriers, all of this stuff. And the EU eliminates tariffs on most U.S. goods. So that's which is one of those things that has a lot of Europeans like,
it's like, well, we make a lot of the same stuff. Yeah. What do you mean?
There's a commitment to purchasing $750 billion in U.S. energy and also investing $600 billion in the U.S. by 2028.
Investing in the U.S., so in the U.S. mainland.
Yeah.
What do you imagine that will look like?
Probably more energy. I think there's a lot of the energy side of the things that are going on there.
So developing more fossil fuels or things of that nature?
My what it seems to me is it's very similar to the Japan energy stuff where it's like there, which is an interesting side of the negotiations here where like Lutnick was talking about this at the AI summit where, cause like what Japan's doing is it's, they're investing like $550 billion or something like that into US energy projects. And then they get 10% of the profits that come from those energy projects.
They being
Japan.
Japan does.
Right.
Okay. So the US gets 90% of the revenue.
Yeah. And these are part of the negotiations and how they're structuring these things. And like, that's probably like Alaskan energy that's going on for the Japan. Like,
sure.
Because it's like the things that will be critical for that country on the energy side, like they're going to help fund the thing so that the trade becomes better for that thing. Like that seems to be the vibe that I'm picking up.
I see.
A lot of these things are still kind of in the wishy-washy framework field. So like any of these things could be subject to change. And some of these things, what I'm seeing is the European Parliament is trying to get in the way of Ursula's trade deal here.
Oh, really?
Trump. So we'll see where that stuff goes. I don't think the EU Parliament's probably going to be able to do much there, but anyways, the next big thing here is still being negotiated is steel, aluminum, and copper, which is remaining at 50% tariffs.
Oof.
But they're still to be negotiated further. Like we're not concluded on those yet.
Sure.
Well, also, Ursula promised a commitment to reducing non-tariff trade barriers, which is things like streamlining regulatory approvals that affect U.S. goods, food safety stuff for agricultural imports. And a lot of that has not been directly revealed on what that is. But it's like we commit to doing that stuff to make it easier, which is where a lot of these, when they talk about non-tariff trade barriers, that's the type of stuff that they mean.
Sure.
That's like the reason why some of the calculus on why we're tariffing you this much and you're not, like this much more than you're tariffing us is because of these barriers that increase the costs naturally. So it's
to
like
to sell into your market. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Where does something like the EU Digital Services Act or some of those regulatory frameworks that threaten the sort of the corporate sovereignty, if you will, the free speech of a platform like X come into play in any of this?
Well, my understanding is a lot of those stuffs are still kind of in the negotiation, but it's looking like those aren't going to be happening. Like the Trump team couldn't get those to be worked out. That's what it appears to me to be like.
Not going
to
be happening. Like they're not
going to
be.
Oh, they're not going to dismantle those projects. Because like there's a lot of things like there's like digital services taxes that it's like if you're a foreign country or foreign tech company that has some sort of software product here and you make more than this amount of money, you have to pay like a 1%, 2% tax on all of your revenue, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the trade negotiations. And it seems like those things got cut from the deals and those things are going to continue to stay in place. Now, a lot of these are still frameworks and these aren't like fully like brought out negotiations yet. Some things are subject to change, but it seems like those things will stay in place still. Maybe they get reduced or something, but these countries make, I remember when we talked about trade in the past, I remember pulling up the numbers and these countries make significant amount of revenue from those taxes. Like surprising amounts of billions of dollars. So you can imagine that's one of those things where the average European or British citizen, they look at it and they're like, we don't got to pay those taxes.
Right.
American companies are paying those taxes.
So who cares?
Exactly.
Right.
So like those are really popular taxes for the citizenry of those countries.
The problem is if any of those citizens use those apps and those taxes create such a burden that the company decides it can't operate in their country anymore, then they lose the access to the digital town square, right? Which is a pretty substantial problem.
Which we saw a lot in places like France with the censorship side.
Right.
Like a lot of these companies like Rumble, a lot of these like kind of new competitors in their fields when it comes to like video services or whatever, social media services, they're all getting, it's like you either have to comply by this law or you can't operate. And then these companies are just like, oh, we just won't operate in France anymore.
Right. Can't blame them.
Yeah. So the next up I have here is Ursula von der Satan. That's where my brain naturally wants to go. Here is her talking about the trade deals and kind of what the approach was in the trade negotiations.
Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
I have a question for the EU Commission President. What are the U.S. concessions? What is the U.S. giving up in the deal, if anything?
So as the starting point was an imbalance, a surplus on our side and a deficit on the U.S. side. And we wanted to rebalance the trade relation. And we wanted to do it in a way that trade goes on between the two of us across the Atlantic, because the two biggest economies should have a good trade flow between us. And I think we hit exactly the point we wanted to find. Rebalance, but enable trade on both sides, which means good jobs on both sides of the Atlantic, means prosperity on both sides of the Atlantic, and that was important for us.
Yeah. And then here is the next thing that I thought was funny from this meeting, where Trump goes on a rant on how much he hates windmills. So let's continue it there.
They're killing the birds.
I will say this, you know, they did ask me when I got off the plane, immigration, Europe has a tremendous problem, and we do too, but we've sealed our borders. We have nobody coming in, and we have hundreds of thousands of people being taken out, and the bad ones first, and I think we're doing a very good job of that. But we had, I mean, it literally registered zero people last month. You probably saw that, nobody. And Europe has a very similar problem. I think they're going to end up in the same place. You might as well go there quicker. And the other thing I say to Europe, we will not allow a windmill to be built in the United States. They're killing us. They're killing the beauty of our scenery, our valleys, our beautiful plains. And I'm not talking about airplanes. I'm talking about beautiful plains, beautiful areas in the United States. And you look up and you see windmills all over the place. It's a horrible thing. It's the most expensive form of energy. It's no good. They're made in China. Almost all of them. When they start to rust and rot in 8 years, you can't really turn them off. You can't bury them. They won't let you bury the propellers, you know, the props, because they're a certain type of fiber that doesn't go well with the land. That's what they say. The environmentalists say you can't bury them because the fiber doesn't go well with the land. In other words, if you bury it, it will harm our soil. The whole thing is a con job. It's very expensive. And in all fairness, Germany tried it, and wind doesn't work. You need subsidy for wind, and energy should not need subsidy. With energy, you make money. You don't lose money. But more important than that is it ruins the landscape. It kills the birds. They're noisy. You know, you have a certain place in the Massachusetts area that over the last 20 years had one or two whales wash ashore, and over the last short period of time, they had 18.
okay? Because it's driving them loco. It's driving them crazy. Now, windmills will not come. It's not going to happen in the United States. And it's very expensive. And I would love to see. I mean, today I'm playing the best course, I think, in the world, Turnberry. Even though I own it, it's probably the best course in the world, right? And I look over the horizon and I see 9 windmills. It's like great. At the end of the 18th, I said, isn't that a shame? What a shame. You have the same thing all over Europe in particular. You have windmills all over the place. Some of the countries prohibit it, but...
okay.
Anyways, you get the idea. It's just so funny.
I appreciate his passion on this topic because I agree. I think they're stupid.
I love how he just because I don't know what the question was before this, but I'm assuming it was about immigration. So he's talking about immigration. And he's just like, and the thing about Europe is windmills.
Well, it was about what is the U.S. giving up? What are the concessions? And she says, well, basically, we're giving stuff up because we were getting a better end of the deal before. And then did they even ask him a question between her? I don't think they did. But yeah, he comes in with immigration and ends up on windmills. Not sure how that happened, but...
He did the weave. He did the weave.
He did the Trump weave.
Well, but it's just like... Remember on Rogan when he's like, they should call me a whale psychiatrist.
They're driving them loco.
You look at out Turnberry, one of the best golf courses in the world, partly because I own it. Yeah. And you look out on the horizon, it's just windmills. Ugh.
Right off the 18th. It's a shame.
Oh, well. I found that clip to be so funny where it's just like a 3-minute rant on windmills. It's like, this dude really hates windmills. And it's funny that every time it comes up, he just goes on this rant where he's just like, he's very passionate.
He is right is the bottom line though. I mean, when you look at the economics of these things, they degrade so quickly and they produce so little in comparison to the amount this is the thing that the environmentalists will ignore, mm-hmm. is the amount of resources that it takes to build them and to run them. You know how many like gallons of lubricant those motors need to run those generators?
Better get Diddy on it.
Dude, Diddy could throw 100 freak-offs on one of those things with the amount of oil they're putting out. It's crazy. Anyway.
Buying up all the supply. Like, yeah, it's,
yeah. Well, it's driving up the cost of wind energy, which is making it uneconomical.
That's why Diddy needs to go to jail. Diddy's guilty. Yeah, so some of the final thoughts on here is actually, I listened to the speech from the Russian foreign minister or foreign affairs minister, Sergei Lavrov. And he gave a speech yesterday, I think. It was all in Russian, so you have to like listen to a translator. And he was talking about the U.S.-EU trade deal, and he was talking about it as being this economic warfare that the U.S. was conducting on Europe. And he called it economic warfare, but with a bow on top, is what he described it
Interesting.
As. Which kind of goes into what I've been saying on these trade deals in the past, too, where it's just like, I think that we're watching Trump kind of put a stranglehold on Europe right now. And he says it's the beginning of Europe's deindustrialization. He also says the energy that the EU is buying from the US will be about 3 to 4x more expensive than trading with Russia.
Wow.
But right now you can't trade with Russia because so there is kind of this thing where it's like, well, if you wanted some cheaper energy, you could create peace with Ukraine, like in the Ukraine situation, could do that.
Right.
But
we'll make a lot of money off of keeping you afloat industrially by selling you energy at a premium. And we're happy to do that. Mm-hmm. And when you're ready to talk peace and you want some cheaper energy, then it's there.
Well, and it's the same thing. And he also talks about the EU becoming more incentivized to invest in the US than it is to invest in itself, which is kind of what we're seeing on the energy side here, where there's this massive, like over $1 trillion worth of money coming into America that Europe's probably taking out loans for. They're probably selling off debt for this.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, is this all in the name of sort of artificially greening Europe by just outsourcing their energy production? It's like energy NIMBYism. They don't want it in their backyard, so they're willing to mortgage the futures of their children and grandchildren to buy expensive American energy, then produce it themselves.
I know. I saw somebody in the European side. Like, I saw a lot of Europeans complaining about this. Like, a lot of Europeans were very upset about this deal, and I saw one person put out the calculation that all of this money that's going into the United States is going to cost the average European citizen about $3,400.
Jeez.
Now, granted that it's like $2,500 is like the average monthly paycheck of a European. So it's like 2 months worth of work, essentially, is what this is costing the average European.
Wow. In terms of the overall debt that they're taking on in order to finance this stuff?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, and that's the thing, is like, it's probably going to be coming from selling off debt, because also in this time period, the EU is taking out, or is taking on, a lot of debt right now, because they announced in March this rearming Europe program, where they're going to be reinvigorating the European military. Over it's like their 2030 military plan, and it's like $800 billion is what they're putting into European military. Another thing that's going to be taking on all this debt. Yeah. And we're watching like Germany's the DAX, which is like the Germany ETF for investing in like the top 40 German companies or something like that. It's been on the rise since March. It's like up like 20% or something like that, which for those types of things is quite a bit. And all of it is because the European Union taking on debt, investing in military infrastructure, and like that's kind of how they're spurring their economy, is by investing in their own kind of military industrial complex, right? So that's kind of what we're seeing in Europe right now.
So what you're saying is it's not real economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
They're just pumping fresh liquidity into their market and fortifying their military on the back of debt.
That's what it appears to be. And I also suspect, like, this has been my suspicion, I suspect that a lot of the Epstein and the Russiagate stuff and these kind of spy games that we're watching, I suspect that these are tied to the trade negotiations more so than people think they are.
How so?
One was that Tulsi Gabbard went to London a week before the Russiagate stuff was announced. The Russiagate and the Epstein stuff have deep European roots in them, you know, Steele dossier, MI6. There's a lot of, I suspect that there's something underlying in there where it's like, I suspect there's kind of like a we caught you type of a deal that's happening in the background there. I don't know what it is. Like, I just have speculation that those things are connected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where we don't know why Tulsi was in London before all this. Like, we don't actually know. We just know she was there.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, yeah, when we're looking at it, it's kind of interesting, you know. There are, you know, there's some of these other trade deals. We don't have to necessarily get into them, but it's just kind of, it's these same types of deals. Like Japan, big trade deal happened. Indonesia's paying 19% tariffs, and the U.S. is going to be paying 0%. There's some energy purchasing that's happening there. They're buying a bunch of Boeing jets. Actually, the real winner of most of these trade deals is Boeing. A lot of these countries are just buying Boeing jets.
That seems... well,
a bit
sketchy.
crony.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but I mean, also Boeing has been in the news, and not for good reasons, a lot in the last several years.
Well, let's give you our old jets.
And it's usually like Southeast Asia where shit goes wrong. Am I right? I mean, mm-hmm. I can think of a handful of crashes that have happened, and mostly in that part of the world. Maybe they're pilot errors. I don't know. Can't blame the company. Don't sue me, Boeing. But anyways.
I would never talk poorly about Boeing.
No, never.
Philippines was another major one. It's still in a series of agreements, but it looks like it's getting around settling, and it looks very much like the Indonesia thing. And the big thing is actually a lot of these countries, they had like absurd tariffs on various things, and just the U.S. could not enter a lot of these markets. And a lot of these countries are opening their markets to the United States. And it's like when we're talking about it, it's like the European economic war is kind of going on, but then you also have all of the countries surrounding China are the major players in these trade negotiations right now. So you kind of see the geopolitical makeup of everything that's happening right
now. I see.
Right?
There's a little bit more pressure perhaps being applied to China by way of the surrounding markets where they might have a fairly strong economic hold.
Exactly. I think that's exactly what we're seeing happening right now is there's a reason why these are the ones that we're pointing to, is because they're important on the geopolitical scale, right?
Yeah.
And also there's like rare earth, you know, we're not even talking about this, but like there was another African country that Trump just helped make a peace deal with. There's another one. So like there's a lot of the stuff that's happening a little bit behind the scenes that doesn't get a lot of media play, where it's like, oh, and now the U.S. gets rare earth minerals in that market, and they get to invest in these rare earth mineral mines and things like that in this African country or that African country. Like there's a lot of those plays that are being made as well.
The U.S. empire, trade empire, is expanding.
Yeah, well, and I think that's kind of what the whole Denmark situation was too, or with Greenland. The Greenland situation with Denmark is like that's another one of those things where it's like attacking the European influence. The Canada thing is another one of those things attacking European influence.
Well, and I saw recently actually as well, and this was just a headline in passing, so I'm not going to be able to dig too deeply into it. Maybe you saw it also, but some headline that you know, Greenland officials had intimated that if the U.S. doesn't move in and like, you know, strike a deal or develop some of their minerals, that they're going to turn to China.
Oh, interesting. Which, I didn't see that.
I don't know. That could have just been a bluff, you know, because perhaps they want the U.S. to come in and do that. I'm not sure, but it seems like that is... Obviously, Greenland's not going to become like a state probably or a territory or anything like that, but it trade seems relations. Like there's a lot of interest in Greenland around trade relations with the U.S.
Trade relations and like investments. Because yeah. Like that's the big thing, is a lot of this is investments, right? Like we're going to get a piece of the pie for whatever those minerals are, open up trade. It's going to be net beneficial for both of us.
Maybe get
like,
a spot for a port or a military base or exactly. two or three.
All of those things. I think all of those things are in play here because like the whole like... energy sector apparatus, the intelligence services and the military, like all those things are intertwined, right? So like there's like the national security aspect. There's also the trade and economic aspect. Like all of those things come with their varying things. Well, and that's also another thing, just like for our European friends, if you're thinking like, oh, Europe really got the bad end of this, is like, yeah, but we also like supply your military. Like we are also your military backbone. But now you also have to pay more on NATO too. Right. Like, so all these, there is some L's, like the old order is shifting right now and we're watching it take place. So
very true. Very true. And it seems like, yeah, perhaps Europe's been getting a really good deal until now. And those times are coming to a close.
A lot of these countries have been getting really good deals.
Yeah. Like
they've been able to reap in a lot of tariff revenue off of the U.S. because they've been in these rebuilding phases. And it's like, hey, you're rebuilt now. Yeah. Like now you're a normal country. Like, right. Like there's kind of that stuff that's going on.
Interesting. And this is fairly tangential, but I just saw today that it was made public that now Venmo and PayPal have a way for people to donate to the U.S. government to pay down the national debt. Did you see this?
Interesting. I did just see PayPal introduced, I think Bitcoin is now available for vendors to accept now on PayPal.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. That's interesting.
That's interesting that you have a way of what?
Yeah, I know. Like you hear it back in your head and you're like, this is insane. So outside of the taxes that we already pay that should go to paying down the national debt, you now have the ability to donate to the federal government to help this poor country pay out its $36 trillion debt. Please. Oh, gosh. We need your money. We need more of your money. It's rather laughable. Apparently, that's been a thing that you can do for quite a long time. I think it might date back to the 60s. I did just a very brief scan of this. But now there are new ways. There are new modern ways for us tech-savvy American taxpayers to contribute further to the betterment of our society.
It makes me think, it reminds me of in the early days of the Ukraine-Russia war, you had the Ukrainian finance minister out on Twitter. This was kind of like right before the last crypto crash of the previous cycle. And when everybody was still kind of in that heyday of like that crypto hype before the FTX collapse. And he was just like, if you donate to the Ukrainian military efforts, we're going to drop you free NFTs and things like that. Where you can have these historical commemorative NFTs. And then a bunch of people did. And just Ukraine just never did it.
I mean, if you thought you were going to get shit from that, I'm sorry, but you deserve to get rug pulled. I'm sorry.
It was like Ukraine just rug pulled everybody.
Well, that's not the most far-fetched idea ever. Ukraine has historically been one of the most corrupt countries ever. What makes you think they're actually going to follow through on that? Come on.
Okay, let's get into the spilling of the tea. What is this tea app leak? What is going on here? I've seen a lot of chatter around it, but I haven't looked too deeply into it. So what's going on with this thing?
This was new to my radar this week. So there is an app that I was previously unaware of called the Tea app, or its actual name is the Tea Dating Advice, which I think is an interesting name given what it actually does. But it's a women-only mobile app designed to allow women to anonymously share and access information about men that they may be dating or are considering dating. It was founded in 2022, so it's fairly new, by a guy named Sean Cook. Allegedly after his mother's own negative dating experience using apps. Now, this guy's like in his 40s. I'm not sure what kind of dating experiences women have in probably their 60s and 70s. on apps, but you know, apparently it wasn't a very good one. So it's been marketed as a virtual whisper network. And that kind of bothers me in and of itself, but
it's a creepy way of putting it.
It's a really creepy way of putting it. The intentions, I think, are good in that it's designed to enhance women's safety when dating. Guys, you don't want to go out on a date with some dude with a criminal record.
Meeting strangers on Tinder or whatever.
Right. I can see where there would be risks inherent in that and where this could provide some value and help women protect each other and sort of crowdsource this information about men. So users could use this app to post reviews. They could post photos, you know, list red flags, green flags.
10 out of 10. Would recommend.
Great date. Paid for everything. Would recommend. And also, you can perform background checks, which I found rather interesting. I think that's probably the most, like, legit part of this. Like, if it's just some way of having a subscription fee to run background checks on guys before you go out with them, probably a smart thing to do generally in this day and age. You can also do reverse image lookups. I don't know exactly the extent to what, you know, that would do, but if you could put a picture in of a guy you were going to go on a date with and see if there are other reviews or things about that person, could be potentially valuable.
With AI now too, with like facial recognition, I'd be curious if they have, if they utilize software to like match it with other photos that aren't necessarily, like, it's not necessarily a reverse image lookup, but it's like a search for this person type of a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Here's this guy. Show me all the other things about him. Or whatever. Yeah. Now, I mean, this app and groups like this, you know, are fairly common, I would say, on Facebook.
There's Facebook groups designed for this type of thing.
Yeah. Right. And the one that I know of here locally, and I know they're all over the place, is like, are we dating the same guy? Mm-hmm. And basically it's just that, but it's a Facebook group where someone can post a picture and women can chime in and say, oh, you know, good guy or total piece of shit, whatever. But it leaves a lot of room for there to be libel and defamation and outright, you know, total lies said about people or misinterpretations of things that went wrong, scorned lovers and, you know, people wanting to basically ruin someone's life because they felt rejected, whatever. Like these things can spiral out of control very, very quickly. So there's concerns around them. You know, they encourage doxing effectively. And I know people personally who have had, you know, nearly damaging situations around these kinds of apps where people started to share information that shouldn't be shared.
I know people that have had false accusations and stuff, not necessarily from these apps, but kind of like Me Too era type of stuff,
right?
That had false accusations and proved in court type of deals and winning their court case,
right.
Situation. So it's one of those things where like there's a double-edged sword that exists within this technology.
Right.
Because like some of it is like, I get the safety side, but there's also the libel defamation side.
Right. And there's an interesting little wrinkle to this women's only app as well, which I found interesting, which is that they come under some scrutiny for not being inclusive of non-binary and trans people because it's a women's only app and there's a verification process where you have to upload a picture of your photo ID and a selfie like you have to do for like banking and stuff like that. You have to do that for this app to prove that you're a woman. So
I suspect that there's a lot of people, a lot of men trying to see if they're on the app, pretending to be a woman.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't know how rigorous the verification process is, but that is interesting.
Yeah.
If you fake an ID or whatever.
Right. Well, and we saw a photo on Twitter before we started recording of a guy in a wig, just very clearly trying to scam the verification process to get in. Anyway, speaking of the verification process, that is where this leak really happened. So users have to verify their identity with a selfie, at least up until 2023, a government issued ID also. And so these images, as they are often said with banking apps and other apps that require this facial recognition stuff, that they promise they will be deleted after the verification process is completed. Well, leak number one occurred earlier this month. The app suffered what I can barely call a major data breach because of the way it happened. Basically, it exposed sensitive data of many of the pre-2023 users whose data was stored in a legacy database with very, very weak security. We're talking like a public database that a 4chan user just kind of went casually looking for and just had access to with no, you know, stereotypical hacker stuff happening. It was just like, oh, this is publicly available. And so he just put it on 4chan. And then, of course, 4chan does 4chan things and it gets on the entire internet.
That's such the thing with, because so many of these types of leaks happen where it's just the verification process is often the most damaging thing for people.
Yeah.
Because like though that stuff is what gets leaked.
Yes.
Because just these companies don't handle the information properly or don't delete the information or whatever. And then that causes just so much harm to everybody else. Where it's like, it would be like banks with social security numbers, things like that, where it's just like.
Exactly. Ugh. Exactly. And so what we find happening here is there's over 13,000 selfies and photo IDs of these women who use this app launched into the internet. So now all of their personal information is available publicly.
For safety purposes.
Yeah, exactly. Completely undermining the whole purpose of this app in the first place, which is to make dating safer. And so now, you know, there are a lot of concerns that these women are going to experience, you know, doxing on the internet and stalking and all sorts of crazy things. Additionally leaked were almost 60,000 images of posts and comments and direct messages that were publicly viewable within the app. So what was once...
No end-to-end encryption.
Not even close, Kyle. Now, they did improve their security apparatuses after the 2023 mark. And so all the new users, it seems, are unaffected. But those original users are definitely out swinging in the cold right now. This just... There's so many things we could poke at on this. Like, how does an app get this big and have security measures that are so weak?
I think it was like 1.5 million people on this app.
And it was tremendous growth trajectory. I mean, it was like 500% growth over the last year or something like that. Like, it's exploded recently as it's achieved these network effects. So maybe it outgrew its security infrastructure and they just didn't think to go back and do that because they're busy building new features and doing all the flashy, cool stuff that they want to do. Probably somewhat the case. But nevertheless, it has certainly damaged their reputation and users are really pissed. So there was a map that was created using EXIF data, like the embedded metadata within the images. There's a map created with pins all over the United States of women that have used this app.
So now you can look up any woman who used this app.
Well, their personal information isn't tied to the locations, at least not on this map. I'm sure someone with enough tenacity and skill could figure that out. But that map is out there. And there's also a joke website called tspill.fun that was created, which allows users to view and rate women based on stolen selfies. So it's like a hot or not website for the chicks that use the T app, which, and it's, look,
the level of irony is pretty funny when you think about it, because that's a piece of what this app is.
That's exactly
on the
app.
Other, like, part of it is the safety concerns, like, is he a cheater, blah blah blah, whatever, but also a lot of it is like
just talking shit
type of talking just shit talking stuff shit. Right,
yeah, for sure. And reputation damaging, probably. So this website exists. And I just want to point this out too. Like, these are selfies taken for verification. These aren't like well manicured, hair done, like cute dating profile
although
pics.
I imagine they have.
These are like not good pics. Usually.
I imagine that they probably have profiles on this app. Because is it like, how does it work? Is it kind of like a social media network? Is it like pages? I don't know.
I'm not
allowed in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Not, it's all news to me.
Gonna have to put on my wig and my.
Yeah, we should start a human reaction T app profile.
I remember.
If there are any women in our audience, and I know there are not many of you. There are some. If you have a T account, hit us up on Discord. We'd love to know how the app works. We'd just love to have some more information.
Be curious about that.
And are any of us on it?
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. I remember back in the day, I want to say it was like a decade ago. I think I was in college when this app exists. There was Lulu, I think is what it was called. And it was an app like this, where it was kind of hot of a, like a hot or not type of app for women to rate men and things like that. And then they would like put hashtags about the men. And so like you could categorize men by the hashtags and things like that. And some of them are positive, some of them are negative.
Right.
And that company went under because of lawsuits. Like they got sued into oblivion for defamation and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's what I envision probably post-hacking here, that that's what we're likely looking at.
Probably so. I mean, I would say, because I don't know to what extent the problem is more the release of information of the users mm-hmm. or the release of information of men that might have been featured on this app.
Mm-hmm.
I think the greater risk is suit by the women whose private information was
yeah.
leaked. Because, well, I don't want to say they might be more likely to sue in this case regardless, but if my private information were leaked by an app that told me that they had deleted that data, and I now feel like my security, my personal safety was compromised, mm-hmm. I would probably be inclined to try to recover some damages for that. And the company has offered the users like a year of free identity protection, like fraud protection or whatever, to make sure that they basically did, you know, what every company does when a leak happens. They did basically the bare minimum to ensure that the bases are covered. And they've, you know, they've enlisted the FBI and cybersecurity firms and people to kind of figure this whole thing out and help them rectify their systems. But it wasn't like they were maliciously hacked. They left this stuff. It's like they left a pie on a windowsill and the birds came and ate it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you got to take some responsibility for that. They really fucked this up. But there was actually a second leak. It didn't stop at the first.
This was yesterday,
right?
This was
literally yesterday. Second leak was discovered involving a database of over 1.1 million private messages, also hosted on an unsecured system. Okay, so this actually was discovered by a cybersecurity researcher who I think must have been poking around after the initial leak mm-hmm. and then found this other hole in their system. Apparently, any TApp user could access this by using their own API key due to misconfigured security settings, which, you know, API keys are just a way for websites to communicate mm-hmm. with one another and share data. But we're talking like highly sensitive stuff here, like private conversations, discussions about abortions, cheating partners, phone numbers, social media handles, and people's actual names. So the first one was like, okay, that's bad. But this is like really bad because now you have a cross-reference of IDs and social handles and phone number. Like you have actual contact information. You have ways of like finding people, harassing people. Like this is a huge, huge problem.
Moral of the story there. Don't use apps that don't have end-to-end encryption.
Yes, yes.
Like there's the moral of the story there. Or at least don't send sensitive information at all under anything that's not end-to-end encrypted.
Right.
Because you can't trust these companies.
Right.
You just can't do that.
Well, and a lot of the companies that do require the government IDs and the, you know, and the selfies and stuff, like they're integrated third parties that do very much rely on their end-to-end encryption to ensure the user that they're safe. And like, I'm pretty deliberate about making sure that I trust the entity that's doing the verification before I actually go and do that stuff. Obviously there was not that here, but it raises the question of like how this could happen. I think there's a million ways it could have happened. One interesting theory that I saw that I don't think is actually true, but the app was started by a man. So was this all a honeypot operation? And was this leak intentional?
Dude, I wonder that sometimes with some of these major apps that go off I've thought that about a lot of apps in the past where it's like, it could be a honeypot operation. Like sometimes I think about intelligence. Sometimes I think about like those that I'm not saying that this was intelligence, but
it's
always a thing that's in the back of my mind with various apps. Like I'm very careful with what apps I put on my phone and things like that.
Right.
I worry about that.
Well, even wonder about things like Signal, right? It's like Signal, you know, yes, it's open source and you can vet the code and all that stuff if you're savvy, which I'm not, but, you know, was developed by a nonprofit with CIA ties. So mm-hmm. how trustworthy is that? I don't know.
Well, and then there's like always the questions with, because the three major apps really for end-to-end encryption are Signal, WhatsApp, and Telegram. And WhatsApp is Meta. Mm-hmm. So like there's the Zuckerberg America tie and, you know, it pretty much you should suspect that there's probably a backdoor that exists there with anything that's developed directly by a US company. You have Signal for exactly what you were saying, is that there are actually, remember we covered what's her name from PBS. The head of PBS used to be on the board for Signal.
That's right.
And speaking of, PBS just got defunded.
Yes. Was it NPR? I forget.
NPR. Yeah. NPR. NPR is mm-hmm. what it was. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I forget her name. I can like picture her.
Yeah.
And she has all those like intelligence ties,
yeah,
which is just interesting in itself. And then Telegram is Pavel Durov, who you know, there's always concerns about potential Russia connections, even though he fled Russia, but like,
yeah.
But, and he was just, he just got out of house arrest in France recently.
Oh, wow.
You know, so like there's kind of, those are the three apps where that are like the big end-to-end encryption apps and mm-hmm. very important services. But, you know, you always got to be cautious with that too.
That's right. Mm. Carrier pigeon. Mm-hmm. Best way. Yeah.
That is smoke signals. That's,
exactly.
That's the old smoke signals.
Well, smoke signals are pseudonymous, but they're not.
Much like most blockchains. Right.
So, I mean, I guess this does raise the question, because now, you know, this has sort of become a situation where, well, for some men, this could be a reverse vetting opportunity, yeah. where it's like, well, now I have a database of images of women that were on this this app, so I can check and see if they're on there.
There does right? raise, that also raises a question in my mind, is like, what if the roles were reversed?
Yeah.
On if there was a app like this for men talking about women, like I can only imagine the media stories about that.
Oh man.
Without it even getting leaked, you know?
Totally. I mean? Totally. Just the mere premise of that app mm-hmm. would raise tremendous scrutiny in the media.
Totally. Like, yeah. like it would be a thing that there would be legislation that would be brought forward about an app like that.
100%.
If it was that case.
100%.
So it is one of those things where you, you know, like there is kind of a double standard element that you could maybe look at in this story too.
For sure. For sure. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, yeah, maybe it's true that men don't face as much safety risk concerns when it comes to dating. But there is a tremendous amount of reputational risk
involved with this. The post-MeToo era, there's a lot of concerns that exist there.
Well, right. You say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing, you could end up on one of these groups. You don't know who's on this group. If a coworker or a boss is on one of these apps and someone writes something malicious about you and you lose your job or you don't get a promotion or, I mean, any number of things can happen from these things. So, I mean, my whole question is like, yes, of course, people should be able to freely associate and freely share information. But is this... A, is this ethical? And B, is this good for dating culture, which is already so fucked up in our current day?
Yeah, it's actually this type of thing. We were talking about this beforehand, but I was talking about Vivek Ramaswamy when he was running for office. I remember listening to him on a podcast, and he was asked about his parents' arranged marriage because he was because Indian descent, you know, mm-hmm. They got arranged married. And Vivek made this point that always like stuck with me, where it's just like, well, I mean, Americans just have arranged marriages, but they outsource it to algorithms now.
It's true.
And so like, there's a question of like, would you rather have your most trusted people helping arrange and set you up with your partner for life? Or would you rather have, these, tech companies setting you up for your partner for life?
Totally. And I mean, I think it's even a stretch to say that the tech companies have anything in mind regarding your best interest mm-hmm. other than just getting more of your money. I mean, having used these apps in my life, like the first thing they want to do is get you hooked in. And then the next thing they want to do is feed you a bunch of matches that aren't good matches so that they get you to pay for the premium thing mm-hmm. so that you get back to the good matches. And
so you get pushed into the algorithm and
right. Right. And it's,
you know, I've looked at some of the data around, particularly for men, is like the sheer data of and inability to get matches for most men is like an astonishing number.
Yeah,
the power law distribution, you have to pay big dollars in a lot of ways
for sure. And actually, the account on Instagram and I believe X as well, called Homath, HOEMATH. Does, I mean, honestly, like for all the humor in the name, like does actually really interesting, like deep dives into the psychology and sort of the economics, if you will, the numbers of dating and sort of the ways that our dating culture has become so distorted mm-hmm. and our perception of what an attractive or a suitable mate looks like is so completely out of whack between men and women. It almost feels like it's beyond repair. And it all just needs to be abandoned. But the hard thing is, you know, I don't know. I've heard that women say they like to be approached in the wild, mm-hmm. right? But then you see it happen. A buddy goes up, talks to a girl at yeah. a bar, whatever, and like crash and burn. You know, maybe it's a lack of practice. Maybe it's the fact that they say they want to be approached in the wild, as we say, because, oh, it has this romance to it. It could be like a movie and like, oh, you know, whatever. I don't think it's actually true.
Women have a way of saying fantasies out loud that aren't actually real. I'm kidding,
and there
women.
Go all of
I'm
our
kidding, women.
Wonderful female listeners. Don't listen to him. He doesn't mean it.
Some light humor.
Some light humor. Are apps like this good for women?
It's one of these things where sometimes you wonder if maybe there's a phase, and I wonder this with technology oftentimes, if there's like this generational phase that maybe a certain generation goes too far into a specific technology, and then the next generation pulls back a bit and it's a little bit more with moderation, or maybe it's a tool or whatever. And I'm not sure if I see that with dating apps. I feel like it's just going to keep going.
Yeah.
This feels like more and more keep popping up all the time.
Well,
and everybody just gets sick of one and then they move on to the next.
Right. They've all got very slightly divergent value propositions. Mm-hmm. Like they're all mostly the same, but they do one thing different. But I mean, even more to the point of like the vetting apps, are the vetting apps good for women? Because to me, what this looks like is one woman has a bad experience with a guy for whatever reason. Maybe it's his fault. Maybe it's not.
Maybe it's just a breakup.
Yeah. Maybe she's just hurt, right? Which is totally understandable. But then she goes on one of these apps and trashes the guy. And then 10 or 100 or 1,000 other women see that and go, that's a bad guy. And so they won't date him. But maybe he's a great guy for one of them. Maybe it just wasn't the right match.
Yeah.
So by listening to the opinion.
Or maybe she's the problem.
Well, right.
Like there could also be that element too.
And so you're finding yourself. I mean, like with these apps, like, I imagine, I don't know this for sure because I'm not on the inside of it, but I have to imagine that 90% of the things said on it are probably negative, right? Like with the, are we dating the same guy things?
100%.
It's like trying to find the bad apples and get them out, which makes sense. But if everyone has, you know, say dates 10 people in a year, let's just use round numbers, and one of them is bad and they end up saying that one was bad, then basically everyone is going to say that everyone is bad and no one's going to be dating. So like, to me, this is a race to the bottom.
Yeah. And there's a certain element of like, everything's just becoming more and more public for people all the time. And just like, as the technology continues to grow, all of our lives just because of social media and things like that. And then apps like this, it's just like, you can't hide from anything. Like, unless you're like really diligent on trying to be private or trying to do this, is like, you can't hide from anything. And,
right.
And especially if you're a man that's, you know, trying to be like, I don't know, the top of your field and you have competitors or something like that, like, you know, the world's a brutal place and people are going to use whatever edge they can get on to try to attack you. And this is another one of those things where just the existence of those things, it makes it much more difficult.
Yeah.
And not even just like the dating environment, like it like could affect jobs, could affect promotions, could affect, you know, anything.
Heaven forbid you have political aspirations, in which case, you know, it's going to come up because nobody does a deeper dive or no one gets a deeper dive done on them than someone running for elected office.
Yeah. And we're seeing more of that now as we're seeing younger, more people that grew up with technology, like those types of that, those generations entering Congress now, there's just more things to be able to look into and just being like, oh, when they were 19, this one
smoke
thing
weed or whatever,
like that type of thing is, it just becomes more like you almost have to, and like almost parents almost maybe need to teach their kids how to be more private when it comes to social media and things like that. But it's like really hard to teach a kid that because all these kids are getting into like social media kids apps or whatever when they're 8-10 years old, which is like useful because they're able to communicate with friends and all this stuff. And but like then there's also these things are going to stay with you for the rest of your life if you do something stupid, and kids do things stupid. And there's like this negative feedback loop that feels like it comes with that. And I don't know how we break out of that.
I don't know
how we like parse out the good and take away the bad in those things. Cause like it is these things where there's good and bad and kind of both elements of it.
But what it does, I think in summary of kind of what you're saying, is it removes the opportunity for someone to have a second chance, right? Because
there's
like you have this permanent record trailing behind you at all times.
It's like school.
Yeah.
You have your permanent record.
Yeah. It's on your permanent freaking record. It's like a rap sheet. And if you screw up on relationship and someone spills the beans on the T app, you're branded. It's the scarlet letter of our generation.
Well, because I am thinking back on, because like I know some guys that basically straight up got extorted by their significant others, like More than one. Like, it's like a weird thing where you're like, I wonder how much this actually happens. Where it's just like girls that like just straight up like extorted, if you leave me, I'm going to say all these things, like that type of stuff. And then kind of like gold digger stuff, and like those types of elements. And like, I look at that and it's like, you know, might be useful to have an app for stuff like that. Right.
But, I suppose.
But then you could defame people in the other regard. You know, right. It's like,
it seems sort of like a lose-lose.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like, 'cause there are some things that just should be private. You know,
well, it's an element too, like in bigger cities too, it's probably much more of a problem because there's just such like a bigger pool, so there's more room for problems to occur. But like, you know, we're still in a smaller city, so there's probably less of this that goes on, but there's some of it. Like the Facebook groups are a real thing. Like I know there's a few of those Facebook groups that exist here. So
yeah, I think the mechanism itself, be it an app or a Facebook group, can be even more damaging in a small town where reputation matters even more, because more people know you potentially.
Yeah.
Right. It's easy to be anonymous and to blend into the crowd in a big city. And if you burn a bridge here, you can meet somebody down the block that has never met that person and it's all good. Right. Mm-hmm. A lot harder to do in a tighter knit community like ours or like any small town in the United States. So, I mean, to me, the risks here seem pretty high. For men, but also for women, again, because it's just like you can basically wipe all of the potentially good partner matches out of contention because you're listening to and trusting another person who may have had a completely different experience than you'll have. So to me, I don't know. The whole, I guess, moral of the story is use your own judgment, right? Like, don't just rely on crowdsourced information to make up your mind about the world. Like, use your own brain and your own intuition and, you know, take everything else kind of with a grain of salt, I guess.
Well, it's just one of those things is people lie too. Like it there's probably success in the app that happens where you do expose a baddie or whatever, like that probably happens a lot, but then there's just, people are vindictive. People lie and you gotta be concerned about that. And I would understand any man that, you know, if that would want to sue for defamation, this app for information that happens on it, which is what happened with Lulu.
Right.
You know, it's also one of those things where like in the Facebook groups, that's another issue where, you know, like I almost wonder if Meta in the aftermath of this would try to shut down those types of Facebook groups. I wouldn't be surprised if those groups went away after this because like, there would be concerns that exist there.
Right. I mean, I could definitely see that. Mm-hmm. I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
And I think that might be for the better. I know there's a better way to get the kernel of good out of this, which is like the background checks, the criminal histories, like the concerning things that you want to be aware of before walking into a situation, if you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's not always going to be possible, but the more we can keep people safe and honest in dating scenarios and any scenario in life, probably going to be better than worse. But at the same time, we don't need to be airing everybody's dirty laundry all over the internet.
Well, that's another thing is like, I actually think what you said about the second chances is such a real thing is like people change between being like 20 years old versus 30 years old. Like people change a lot.
Yeah.
Like you're not the same person at that. Most people aren't the same person after 10 years. And so if there's some sort of like pent up rage against a person that is like 10 years old, it's just like, that might not be real anymore. Right. Like it might have been true in the past,
but you don't get the context there. You may not get the context.
That's the problem with all like social media in general, these verification apps, all this is like, oftentimes you're missing context. Everything is very short, quick hits and you never have the context with it.
That's right. Well, that's what we strive to do here is provide the context. And we are glad to have had you here for this episode. We appreciate you. Let us know in the comments, do you think the T app is a good thing for men or for women, for dating in general? And let us know your thoughts. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, we've got a Discord group. It's amazing. The link is in the description below. We'd love to have you. Once again, this is Human Reaction. For Kyle Mack, our wayward brothers David and Bennett, I'm Joe Sheehan. We'll see you in the next one.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.